the value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Welcome to the Investor Download, the podcast about the themes driving markets and the economy now and in the future. I'm your host, David Brett. After 18 months of lockdown, many of us have been relishing the return to some kind of normality. But with the world reopening, it's causing shockwaves through the global economy. Pent-up demand has outstripped supply, causing prices to rise. From goods in the supermarket.
If you've been inside of a supermarket like this one in the last 6 months, you know this to be true. Prices are climbing, but according to one of the largest grocery chains in the country, they will continue to rise over the rest of this year. Kroger says that their inflation will soon become customers' inflation in the coming months.
To petrol at the pumps.
Warnings of a truly dark day for drivers as petrol prices hit a record high across the UK. The average price for a litre of petrol reached 142.94
pence. But huge demand and rising prices are exacerbating supply chain issues.
Retailers and manufacturers ordering because of these supply chain issues. And that's just leading to essentially even a worse scenario. In the sense that there is now more, there's a even bigger crunch on capacity because everyone is over-ordering and overstocking, because the last thing that retailers want is to have an understock, right? To not have enough goods in the stores. And this is leading to what is essentially called a bullwhip effect that just makes this entire process worse. Manufacturers can't supply fast enough. Supply chains can't keep up fast enough. Rising container prices and ports being clogged up don't help the scenario.
It's crippling networks and causing panic buying.
Residents in London had to wait for hours to refuel their cars amid a massive fuel crunch in the United Kingdom.
And it's caused prices to rise further. But so too has central bank policies, which include low interest rates.
It takes two to tango. That, yeah, we have had supply side shocks, but the question as to whether or not the Federal Reserve and fiscal policy overly accommodated the ability to spend on those supply-side shocks.
But rising prices and supply chain issues are beginning to hamper the economic bounce back. It's risking a rise in unemployment and complicating the task for policymakers of steering the economic recovery. And that's uncovering a potentially more serious problem, stagflation.
Stagflation is a combination of growth and inflation, where you've got slower growth and you've got rising inflation. So it's quite a nasty combination, really. It's like the worst possible combination of growth and inflation.
That's Keith Wade, chief economist at Schroders.
It's often associated, say, with rising unemployment and rising inflation. It's quite unusual because normally you would associate rising inflation with periods of very strong growth. But this is actually a more stagnant economy, but one that has inflation with it. So it's not a good combination to have.
And it's usually triggered by a shock, like a global pandemic, for instance.
And what's happening is that the economy suddenly finds that its capacity has been shortened or reduced, and yet it's still trying to produce the same amount of goods, and it finds that it can't do it. And so what you end up with is a situation like we're seeing in Germany, for example, at the moment, where the automakers have had to actually cut production because they can't get all the parts they need for the cars.
Opel employees in Germany are looking at an uncertain future. Due to the global semiconductor shortage and supply bottlenecks, the company has decided to suspend construction of the Grandland SUV at its Eisenach plant. Employees have been told they will be shifted to part-time work.
But they're still increasing the prices of their cars because they're trying to ration the demand. So you get this combination of higher prices and lower output. So companies are increasing their prices as they come out of their factories or out of, you know, in restaurants or hotels or the service sector. Prices are going up, but the amount that those sectors are producing is actually going down. So We haven't got all the GDP numbers yet, but I dare say that what we will get for the third quarter that we've just been through and as we go into the fourth quarter will be weaker GDP growth but higher inflation. And that's stagflation.
So stagflation is more than just a threat. It's already happening in certain sectors, in certain countries and in certain parts of the world. And we know from past experience just how devastating stagflation can be.
Probably the most extreme example was in the 1970s, when in the UK, inflation hit just over 26% year on year in August 1975. And at that time, GDP growth was minus 2.4%.
Inflation was rising in the 1970s already. Then came the oil crisis of 1973. It was triggered by members of the Organization of Arab Petroleum Exporting Countries announcing an embargo for any country seen to be supporting Israel in the Yom Kippur War. It meant that countries like the US and the UK could no longer import oil from the crucial Middle Eastern countries. And the sudden supply shock sent the oil price soaring by 300%.
New cars and used cars stand like shining tombstones in the showrooms and parking lots of the nation's car dealers, unloved, unwanted, and unsold. People can no longer afford to run cars that do 12 miles to the gallon. Petrol stations can no longer afford to fill up cars whose tanks take 20 gallons. The monsters are dying of thirst. The energy crisis is killing them.
UK inflation spiked and unemployment climbed sharply. The knock-on effect included the government being forced to ration electricity, frequent power cuts, and an enforced three-day working week. The stagflation of the 1970s forever changed the way that financial officials think about keeping economies stable and in good health. It caused many economists to question their assumption that there was a stable inverse relationship between inflation and unemployment. In other words, that an increase in the demand for goods drives up prices, which in turn encourages firms to expand and hire additional employees, creating additional demand throughout the economy. However, a period of stagflation, or slow growth along with rapidly rising prices, raised questions about the assumed relationship. While the crisis the global economy is facing now is not on the scale of the 1970s, it's still a problem. So are there any lessons we can learn?
Well, back in the 1970s, they didn't really know what to do because they could see that on the one hand, they should be cutting interest rates to deal with the weakness of growth. And then on the other hand, they should be raising rates to deal with inflation. Now, ultimately, we ended up with the monetarist revolution and, you know, it was decided that the answer to these situations is to increase interest rates. You have to get inflation under control. And that's still very much, I think, the orthodoxy in central bank thinking. However, we are in a new environment where the central banks are willing to tolerate a bit more inflation. So it's very interesting to see the different reactions. I would say that the Bank of England are pursuing a very orthodox line where they're sort of making noises about raising interest rates because they're worried about inflation. Whereas the ECB and the Fed are a little bit more, well, you know, we've had a long undershoot of inflation. We could probably allow it to run hot for a little bit, have some extra inflation, even though, yeah, and we should concentrate on trying to make sure that we have maximum employment in the economy. So we don't want to raise rates and really cause a lot of unemployment, and we can probably tolerate a little bit of inflation. But bottom line, actually, David, is that interest rates need to increase, and, you know, not by huge amounts, but the monetary policy needs to be tightened.
But can the economy stomach policy tightening such as rising interest rates?
I think the economy can probably take some interest rate increases. Remember that the level of interest rates is very low. It was set, you know, for the emergency pandemic conditions. So some normalisation could be allowed, but I think they've got to be careful. We know that the level of debt is very high in the household sector. Debt has increased. Corporate sector debt's increased. Government debt's increased. So if you start raising interest rates, you increase borrowing costs, and that can have quite an impact on household budgets. So that has to be seen also alongside a lot of other things that are happening. So we know that there's a lot of fiscal squeeze coming in the UK economy, for example, with taxes going up. We also know that the increase in inflation itself can put a lot of burden on household budgets. So, for example, of course, we've had the big increase in energy prices, which is a bit like an increase in tax, because your energy price goes up. There's not a lot you can do about that. So I think the central banks have to tread quite carefully. What they're really looking for, or what they're really trying to stop, is what we call the second round effects. So what they'll be looking at is not so much the headline inflation, but they'll be looking at the wage inflation numbers. So if they see sign that wages are going up as well, then that's when they will start to raise interest rates. And that's why there is some evidence of that coming through. And that's why I think that interest rates will need to go up a little bit. But they have to be very careful, because if they raise too much, like, all the pressure is going to come into the households at once, and then you'll end up with a recession.
Stagflation is a worry for economists, and it should be on the radar of investors. How they might react if stagflation hits will be vital to their investment returns, which we'll get to later in the show. But first, investment returns differ depending on which phase of the economic cycle we're in, from Goldilocks to stagflation. And that's what's coming up in the next part of the show.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, you're listening to the Investor Download.
So, to understand how investment returns might be affected by stagflation, we need to first understand what the different phases of the economic cycle are. We know from Keith that stagflation, low growth, high inflation, can occur towards the end of the cycle. But what are the other phases?
And the others are simply other ways of categorizing the evolution of economic output and prices. Those are disinflation or deflation, reflation, and Goldilocks.
That's Sean Markowitz, a strategist at Schroders.
You know, in broad terms, disinflation just means slowing price increases. Reflation is where you have rising economic growth and rising inflation. And Goldilocks is somewhere in between, where the economy is growing faster and inflation is stable or falling. And during the first half of this year, what we really saw was, I'd say, a reflationary period where there was a strong rebound in economic growth alongside rising inflation. But as Keith mentioned, growth momentum is already showing signs of slowing down as some of that fiscal and monetary stimulus fades that we got through COVID. And at the same time, inflation remains elevated. So all of this is pointing in the direction of a stagflationary environment.
But more importantly, how do those cycles affect investment returns?
Well, when we look back in history over the last 4 to 5 decades, reflation has tended to be a period where equities and commodities have performed very strongly, whereas asset classes such as bonds and gold have performed much poorly. And this is consistent with what we've seen over the last 6 months. The reflation environment has favored investing in risk assets as equities and commodities, which have delivered double-digit returns. On the other hand, gold has tended to suffer. But, you know, as we transition into this period of stagflation, a number of investors are starting to worry about what that could mean for their portfolio. And we can look back into the past to see how some of these asset classes have performed. And the results that we've looked at don't really surprise us. The top performers in stagflationary environments have been the traditional inflation hedging assets, such as gold, but also commodities and real estate, proxied through real estate investment trusts or REITs. And this is fairly intuitive. Gold is often seen as a safe haven asset in volatile times when you have slowing growth and rising inflation. Economic conditions tend to deteriorate, so you see increased demand for gold. It's also a period where you could see real interest rates decline as inflation expectations rise, but growth expectations fall. And these lower real rates reduce the opportunity cost of owning a zero-yielding asset such as gold. So it further boosts its appeal to investors. Now, on the other hand, commodities, different driver of its performance, I'd say. It's a source of input costs for companies as well, the key component of inflation indices. So they will perform well when inflation rises too. However, when we looked at the data, the returns for commodities tend to be somewhat weaker in stagflationary periods compared to when we're in a reflationary period. And that's because of this combination of, I would say, push and pull factors, where on the one hand, you see raw material prices and energy costs going up because of the shortages and the supply disruptions. But on the other hand, economic growth is slowing down, which would, you know, be bad for the demand side of commodity prices. And then we have REITs, which tend to offer a partial inflation hedge by the pass-through of their price increases in rental contracts and property prices. But the performance historically has been significantly weaker, about three times weaker in stagflationary environments, delivering a performance of around 6% per annum in real terms, so that's adjusted for inflation, compared to 14% in reflationary environments. And finally, I just mentioned that treasury bonds are a bit of a mixed bag, because, you know, on the one hand, we would expect in a stagflationary environment for them to benefit from falling real rates driven by declining growth. But at the same time, you also have the rising inflation that eats away into their income, sending yields higher and prices lower. And so as a consequence of that, historically, treasuries have yielded quite low negative real returns, around minus 0.1%. So they've barely delivered a positive real return. But when you compare that to the performance that equities have historically yielded in stagflation, they have tended to be on average down minus 2.5%. It looks like a more reliable buffer in those environments. So altogether, I'd say that as we transition into this stagflationary environment, we're likely to see a shift in the performance leadership of different asset classes. The question remains, how long will we be in that environment and what should investors do about it?
Which is coming up in the final part of the show.
Get in touch with us by email at schroederspodcasts@schroeders.com or visit our website, schroeders.com/investor download.
So what does all this mean for investors?
I'm not so sure that investors can be as confident in putting all their eggs into a basket of risk assets, such as equities and other riskier forms of investing, namely because historically, these are the types of assets that have struggled to deliver positive real performance. That's not to say they won't be able to generate good returns for investors, but they're certainly more likely to be challenged by the environment of low growth and high inflation. So if history is any guide to go by, I'd say that REITs and commodities stand out as attractive alternatives to equities, given their inflation hedging potential. At the same time, gold has suffered over the past year or so as real rates have remained kind of stuck in some range-bound area. They haven't really seen real rates fall significantly, which tends to be a strong driver of gold prices. As I mentioned, it's linked to the opportunity cost. So investors may wish to start looking at some of those alternatives, some of those more defensive assets as we transition into a period of stagflation. So overall, I'd say moving away from the reflation environment means we need to start to diversify away from more risky assets and consider more defensive assets. But as I said, we don't know how long that period is going to last. Time will tell.
But throughout the pandemic, stock markets have continued to rise, leaving valuations relatively high, as we've spoken about before on the show. So what does that mean for equities if stagflation were to hit?
That's a loaded question. It has a lot of moving parts. I guess it depends on what central banks do to try and combat that inflation, because to a certain extent, some companies will be able to pass on the higher costs and maintain profit margins. But I think the real game changer is what happens to interest rates, namely will the Fed and the ECB raise interest rates to try and squash some of that pricing pressure, because it's really the path of interest rates and specifically real interest rates, so adjusted for inflation, that will affect valuations. On the other hand, as long as earnings growth can offset some of the interest rate rises and its knock-on effect on valuations, it's possible for equities to still deliver a reasonable amount of performance. So I'd say that investors need to keep an eye out for the likely path of interest rate rises and whether central banks are going to try and fight inflation with those tighter monetary conditions.
Which means all eyes will be on central banks in the coming months.
Right, and it's also because that's, you know, what's driven valuations to record high levels. The liquidity that's been injected into financial markets is partly what's explained the prevailing high valuation environment. And it's also sensible when you lower the cost of financing and the interest rate on borrowing, it should by definition lead to a higher present value for the corporate cash flows that companies are expected to deliver in the future. So it would also then, by the same logic, mean that the reverse could impact their valuations negatively.
Sean's full article on stagflation and how it might affect investments will be available shortly on schroders.com/insights. Here's what else investors are talking about. Following the regulatory crackdown and increased government intervention in markets, questions have been asked as to whether the Chinese stock market is now uninvestable for overseas investors. Or, as the more bullish investors claim, with economic growth set to exceed developed countries, is a significant strategic weighting in Chinese shares merited? Despite the doubters, China has not become uninvestable, but investors need to be selective. Also, which stock market has performed best since the MSCI China Index was launched in 1992? Clue? It's not China. You can read fund manager Robin Parbrook's full story, two charts that show why you should ignore China's index, at schroders.com/insights, where you can read, watch and listen to much, much more. Well, that was the show. We very much hope you enjoyed it. If you want to find out more, check out our website, schroders.com/theinvestor download. You can also get in contact with us about anything in the show or ideas for future shows at schroderspodcast@schroders.com. Please remember to subscribe to us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to leave a review. We're now doing one show a week, which will be available every Thursday from 5 p.m. UK time. Thanks very much for listening, but above all, keep safe and go well. Cheers.